time for Batter Up, the definitive Atlanta Braves podcast with hosts Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson, giving you exclusive insight into our Braves from Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Here's Joe and Caleb.
Welcome in to Batter Up. It is, the week of March 16th?
The Ides of March, Caleb. Beware the Ides of March. What is that, Shakespeare or something?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not smart enough for that.
It's a famed line from some, I can't remember. I think it's Julius Caesar, I want to say. Beware the Ides of March.
Thank you for making me sound dumb and you smart. You know, it's fine.
Trying to bring some class to the pod, you know.
Yeah, well, I think you're also maybe setting folks up for how this podcast goes. I don't know. I keep wanting to call it a podcast because that's how we obviously used to do it in this form. But now that we're on Facebook Live, I cut off the pod. I just call it Batter Up,
which I like is that. Don't put us in a box.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, don't put baby in the corner. unless you're my sister, she does that with her kids, but it's fine. No, but welcome in. I'm Caleb Johnson here with my co-host Joe Patrick on another week. We are getting into the thick of spring training for the Braves. Finally, I think able to start taking real substantial things away from the games that are going on. For one, we're mostly at this point now playing 9-inning games. I think the Twins game the other day, they called it after 8, but we're getting real at bats and getting warmed up for the beginning of the Major League Baseball season. Look, what's going on? I guess right at the moment, the Braves are currently playing the Twins. That looks to be a good game going on for Bryce Wilson. But Joe, I'm just kind of curious in this past week, what you've taken away.
Well, I think to your point, I think what's really interesting, or what's kind of about to get interesting, is that spring training is kind of starting to hit that real meat of it, where your everyday players are now going to start. I don't want to say they weren't taking it seriously at the beginning, but at the beginning of spring training, you're kind of alternating in and out every day. You're trying to get looks for lots of different guys. And now you're getting at the point where we're going to start seeing the starters play, you know, most days, really ramp them up a bit, get them in a better rhythm. And so I think there will be a little bit more we can start to take away from some of these games, like you just mentioned. And hopefully, you know, and Brian Snicker alluded to this week, is that you'll see some of these guys actually get a little bit hotter at the plate because they're getting those regular reps. I think he mentioned that in regards to Ronald Acuna Jr., who, if you go back and listen to our show last week, we were like lamenting or worried about, you know, his form at the plate. Is he going to get going? And then lo and behold, as soon as he starts getting some repetitive plate appearances, or maybe he just listened to Batter Up and got really mad, he starts hitting homers and things like that. So hopefully that can start to happen with Marcelo Zuna and some of the other guys. But I think just in general, it will be good to really start to get a really much better look at some of these guys that we're expecting to see with the Braves in Atlanta this season.
Yeah, any chance that I can get, or I will say we can get to take credit for something.
That's right.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, yeah, just any opportunity to take credit for something like that will do. Now, you talked about Ronald Acuna looking really good this past week. Obviously, the biggest thing for him was the long ball showed up, and he's hitting home runs over the weekend. The one who may be a concern at this point, maybe it's still too early, at least Brian Snicker's not concerned, is Marcelo Zuna, who we obviously signed to a big free agent deal, bring him back, wanting to see what he did in this past 2020 season. And instead, he's looking more like the Marcelo Zuna of last March, who was really struggling through spring. Are there any concerns for you, Joe, like this early on?
I'm not that concerned. And I think to your point, it's like, because we're seeing the same guy we saw last March, before he went on to have, you know, one of the best seasons of his career, albeit in a very shortened season. But yeah, I mean, not really concerned yet. I mean, maybe if this continues at this pace going into the opening day, I'm not going to be thinking that he's going to get off to some like rip roaring April, you know, but either way, I think that, you know, it's only a matter of time before he starts to get into a groove. So, Yeah, of course I'm going to brush off all the negativity, all the potential pitfalls for this team, and only look at the the Ronald Acuña Jr. home runs that we saw this week. No, I mean, I don't mean to even sound like that. Like, I mean, that's not how I feel yet, but I certainly understand if people are a little bit concerned about these kinds of things. But, we got to just understand that we're still in the throes of preseason baseball. Baseball that doesn't really matter, especially for guys who have their positions locked up. You know, it's not like we're looking at, was it Pete O'Brien was like the minor league or the spring training king. He would like come in raking right. every year because he didn't have a spot locked up. You know, he's trying to earn a spot. So he's trying to come in all primed and ready to go to have the best spring he can have.
That's all. That is Scott Kazmaier Jr. this year.
Yeah.
That's who right. I was reminded is 36 years old. And like living the dream, playing
credit to him. Triple. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, it's one of those, honestly, if you found your, what I would call your niche, which is, hey, not good enough to make it into the pros, but I can stay right at that triple A level. And so far this spring, I mean, he leads the Braves in home runs, Scott Kazmaier Jr., you know, nah, which is, it's fun. Like it's a fun story to kind of have. And he'll go back to Gwinnett, you know, when the season starts and carry out, I guess, his enjoyable minor league career where he's – it's one of those – it makes me think of the backup quarterback position, you know, in the NFL where guys are like, I mean, hey, at the money you're making, why not keep doing it? You know, why not
right.
keep
oh, yeah.
clipboard? And in defense of Scott Kazmaier Jr., he's still getting to play. Like, he is good enough to show out on the AAA level. It's just funny that when you see those guys who make the most of their opportunities, but you obviously, there are expectations of what you want from them.
You have to really, really love baseball to be Scott Kazmaier Jr., to be in that position where you're at his age and you're still just, you know, grinding it out every day. That's
riding
not
buses.
That's not a life that a lot of people, you know, want to live. But I think that to be that kind of guy, you have to actually want it. And it's kind of heartwarming to see that, you know, some players out there still do kind of just love the game so much they are willing to do that kind of thing. And who knows, maybe after he retires, he has a very rewarding career as like a baseball coach or as some sort of scouting person in a more professional organization. But I certainly think he has a career in baseball. Not that we're going to spend this whole podcast talking about Scott Kazmaier, but it's just fun to see some of those guys come up and play with the stars, you know, of this organization.
Yeah, the same. So once again, it's one of those, like, not to stick around on this too long. Matt Tuiasosopo. I'm butchering the name. Yes. So he is, was a longtime career minor league player. He is actually managing the Rome Braves, which is not far from where I'm at. It's one of those I want to go see him because I think last year, maybe the year before, is his first year. I would love to go see a game that he's managing. Shifting away from things.
Shifting away from Scott Kazmaier Jr. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. You know, hey, on Batter Up, we are bringing you the riveting topics of the week. You know, the real hard hitting stuff here. If you're watching us on Facebook Live and you have any questions, please feel free to put them in the chat. I will be looking through them throughout our show.
You're our priority. We will answer all questions that come through.
Yeah, we greatly appreciate you tuning in. If you're listening later and you want to send us some questions that you would like us to answer on the next Batter Up podcast, I am at ATLJohnson18. Joe is at JAPatrick200. Feel free to shoot us some questions and we will love to answer anything that you might have. Joe, I do want to kind of transition into some, I guess you could call it, big news of the week for the Braves in this period of time where things are very slow. Anything is big news, even news that we knew was coming. We were just waiting on the announcement, and that is the retirement of Nick Markakis. Now, you likely, if you are the type of person who focuses in on the little details, you knew this was coming because, well, Jason Kipnis has been wearing number 22 all spring. It's kind of the same way of finding out that that Tyler Flowers isn't coming back because you have Christian Pache
took 25. Yeah,
changing to 25. But with the retirement of Nick Markakis, look, 15-year guy is, I remember I was having to say this on flashes this past week, sixth all-time in games played by a right fielder. It was one of those obscure things, but I think it solidifies his model of consistency that he was. Never a guy who was, I think, you know, one-time gold glove, one-time silver slugger, just good at what he does, and you can depend on him every time out.
Yeah, absolutely. Not a Hall of Fame career, but definitely not a career to slouch at whatsoever. He had close to 2,500 hits, I believe, which is impressive. Just the model, to your point, the model of consistency, the model of just being a guy who's going to go out there. You know exactly what you're getting out of Nick Markakis. You pretty much always have throughout his career, even though at the end, his bat definitely slowed down a little bit. But just so much I have so much respect for a guy like Nick Markakis. We just talked about Scott Kazmir as being a guy who's ground out his career in the minor leagues. I mean, Nick Markakis is kind of the same way, a little bit of a, you know, higher quality major league player and a good major league player. But still, just a guy who just came in, did his job every day, loved the game. I really believe that he just worked. He loved the work that it took to be a Major League Baseball player. Not a laugher, not a joker, at least to the media. Always very serious. But he clearly had a passion for the game. Yeah, and any of his teammates would tell you that he was one of their favorites. That was in the clubhouse. Just seems like a really good guy that you want to have on your side during the course of a long season. So I will be interested to see kind of how Braves fans will react to this and how they will kind of remember him, because obviously there are many feelings that people have with regards to Nick Markakis. And I just can't help but think that, you know, like his the way that people will remember him, I hate to say it, but it's going to be in kind of a more negative light, as the guy who was always like in the way of the shiny toy, or like the guy who was kind of blocking the path of a bright prospect or something like that, just because Brian Snicker knew he could rely on a guy like Nick Markakis. So I think that that's how people will remember him, but I don't know. How will you remember him, Caleb?
So here's my thing, and it is tough for me. If you had asked me at the end of 2019 or the beginning of 2020 how I felt about Nick Markakis, I still, you know, would have given you the model of consistency, the just class act in the locker room, guy who's not going to give you a lot of information media-wise, but he's giving tons of information to the other players around. And even so, kind of weirdly transitioned into a bit of a coach.
Yeah.
In his last tenure, you know, here with the Braves in 2020, the backing out and then coming back to play thing really bothered me. And it's one of those, everyone is completely entitled to their own opinion. It just bugged me with what got him to step out was his family. And then what got him to go back and play was his teammates, who he, you know, said he was letting down. I thought that was a really weird moment, I don't want to call it a blemish, because everyone's going to have their own opinion about how he handled that. Mm-hmm. I just didn't personally love it. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of hate that mixed with how poorly he played at the end of the 2020 season. And kind of, he was one who went out with a thud, where, you know, you didn't expect to get anything from him in a moment where you really needed some offensive power, especially in the, you know, the big playoff push. And so I don't want to say disappointed, you know, but it is tough that was the lasting memory. Cause I feel that's whatever you see last is what typically tends to stick around more. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so it almost like, I want to force myself to remember the good days, you know, when things were going well. And I think that happens for a lot of players who play a long time in their career. Like, not everyone can go out on a high. You know, most do kind of crash and burn, for, you know, not having a better term to use there. And so that, I guess my thing is, I want to remember the good days, but those lasting memories towards the end are what is going to stick out. However, just great signing by the Braves overall. I mean, yes, he was very much well worth what the Braves got out of him.
They honestly
just at the end were squeezing the end of the toothpaste tube and nothing was coming out.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you can't, that's a good way to put it. You can't put that on the Braves. You can't put that on Nick Marquez, because you have to put that on the Braves organization for not setting things up any better.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I do think that, to cut him a little bit of slack, I think that the way the circumstances of the pandemic and the way that last season shook out is probably the worst case scenario for a player that is in his position, where you're a guy who's like kind of at the end, and then this thing comes up that makes it so that, I mean, I think that the reason actually that he didn't want to participate in the season was because he didn't think he was going to be able to do the amount of work that he felt was needed to prepare himself for games beforehand, because he's a big gym guy, weightlifter, wants to get in lots of reps in the cage and things like that. And he wasn't going to be able to do all that with the protocols that were put in place. And I think that, you know, he was kind of assuaged by Freddie Freeman, among others, that he would be able to do some of that. But you could definitely see last year he was, I don't want to say like frail, but he definitely looked slimmer and smaller. It looked like he was like, the jersey was like a little bit baggier and stuff. And clearly he was not catching up to a lot of the, especially the high heat, you know, the hard fastballs. He was almost kind of, it was pretty ugly there at the end. It looked like he had to try to guess when the fastball was coming, if he wanted to have any chance to catch up to it. And if he guessed wrong, he would look really silly, either taking pitches right down the middle, or just, you know, swinging and missing quite badly. So just a tough situation for him to end his career. But I think that, generally speaking, I think that people will just, you know, see him for what he was, which was a very solid, dependable player. And I'm glad you also mentioned the fact that he gave the Braves exactly what they needed. You know, when they signed him, you cannot knock him for not continuing to put up, you know, those same numbers throughout how old is he now? I don't even know. But obviously
34 or 35, I think.
Is he? Okay. Into those later stages, you know, he just can't give you the same thing, but, yeah, I mean, best of luck to him in retirement, and who knows, maybe Brian Snicker will be calling on him again when there's some injury or something. I'd say that jokingly. I do not expect that to happen, although I think that some Braves aren't quite putting that possibility out to pasture.
I was about to say, I think the more likely thing is that he will have a long waiting line on a Braves Sunday when he comes back for an alumni tour.
Yeah, exactly.
I think, yeah, that's the thing is, when I say, like, I think he will be remembered well, and a guy that Braves fans truly will miss, but also has now opened the door where, to your point, guys are going to have to step up. And I don't know that we've gotten entirely comfortable with those guys who are going to play out in the outfield. Obviously, for the 2020 season, or 2021 season, I should say, Ronald Acuna is going to take over that spot. We've been kind of dealing with this back and forth of what's going to go on with Christian Pache and Ender Inciarte. Ender Inciarte is back, and I ran some updates earlier today using the sound from Brian Snicker, who says he fully expects Ender Inciarte to be a part of this team. Mm-hmm. He's just got to work his way back from this nagging thumb injury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thumb injury has kept him out of a lot of this spring action, but good to see him back. And in that sound, you know, Brian Snicker said that not only does he have a role, but that he's still competing for that starting center field job, technically. I don't think it's much of a competition. I mean, I think it is in name, but I think that Christian Pache is winning that competition, and that he will win it, and he'll be the starter on opening day. But yeah, I mean, to Snicker's point, I do think that Ender is clearly going to, you know, play a role. He's going to be on the major league roster, And you've got a left fielder, Marcelo Ozuna, who, it's like an open, it's not even a secret that, obviously he's got his defensive liabilities. And I think that you're very likely to see him substituted out of a ton of games this year when the Braves are winning. And, in the eighth inning, after he's already batted, he's probably not going to come up again. You get put a guy like Ender out there to play some outfield defense for you. Hopefully the defense is a little bit better than it's been in the past, but yeah, I still think we'll see plenty of Ender and Ciarte this season. So just because he's not going to win the starting center field position, I don't think that means that people need to totally cast him aside. Although I'm sure the Braves would like to do that if there was any chance they could get rid of his contract, but nobody's going to take it on now. So they're kind of stuck with him, and they'll use him as best they can.
I was about to say, and that's part of the deal with fully guaranteed contracts in Major League Baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think the concerning thing is what's going on behind, when it comes
to...
Yes,
this is where this gets interesting.
Yeah, the depth of the outfield where you have, Adrianza? I feel like I always want to butcher Adrianza. His name. A guy who's coming over from the Twins organization. Obviously, Johan Camargo is going to be a fill-in guy, I would assume, mostly out in left, but more so in short, and then a late game option, coming up to the plate in place of the pitcher, whatever that sort of thing kind of goes on. But all the excitement around young talent has shifted away from Drew Waters, and it seems that it's come full steam on for Michael Harris Jr., who is just 2 years removed from high school. It seems insane.
It's so funny how prospects are. I'm not like a huge prospect guy. I don't really follow them closely throughout the season. I keep tabs because, it's always, you got to know who's generally performing well, but it's just so funny how Drew Waters was like the guy. He was like the hot girl in school that everybody wanted to date. And then, now it's Michael Harris. It's just like, and people were like, yeah, Drew Waters, trade him, get him out of here. it does sound like Michael Harris has outperformed him. And it does seem like if you were trying to, open up a path for another one of these prospects to join that outfield, then seems like Michael Harris would be that guy, at least according to what Brian Snicker said this week.
Yeah, I think with Snit alluding to, he made a comparison that is one of those, I would consider it eye-opening, when Snit says, hey, I look at Michael Harris like I did Ronald Acuna, where if he's going to be an option for me to put in the lineup during spring, I'm going to do that. And that makes you, it's one of those, I heard that and immediately was thinking, whoa, okay, like, can we pump the brakes a little bit? I think before, like, that happened after the announcement came of the guys who have been sent down to minor league camp or have been optioned to Gwinnett. And when his name was on there, I think there was, for me personally, a sigh of like, whoo, okay, so we're not overreacting to this just yet. Like, this kid, for everything that we've seen so far in spring, is a stud, and I don't expect that to change. Also, when you get the cosign of Marquise Grissom, and that gets published in an article that goes out in The Athletic, that's another way that people start to notice and are like, oh, okay, so former Brave cosigns on you, says he's been working out with you and at his land down in Henry County with his own son, who Marquise Grissom's son plays for Georgia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those you start thinking, oh, maybe we really need to consider this guy. But it seems like, at least from what I've seen, I don't know how you feel about this, that he is the next star that we should be looking at, but maybe pump the brakes on 2021.
Yeah, I think on 2021, Grissom's comparisons were even starker than the ones that Brian Snicker said. He was calling him, compare him to Barry Bonds. Was that one of the ones?
There was like, he was it was almost like he was just like name dropping some of the greats, like some of the greatest outfielders.
Yeah, they're all like Hall of Famers. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing I think that is very interesting about this Michael Harris situation, when you compare him with Drew Waters, and I don't know if these guys are ever going to be able to be like decoupled when we talk about them, because they're, you know, clearly it's like these two top prospects vying for what's going to be one spot in this Braves outfield after this season, when we assume that Marcell Ozuna will then transition to a pretty much a full-time DH role, assuming that comes in the next CBA.
Come on, Major League Baseball.
Is that, you know, Michael Harris, it sounds like he is the more seasoned player, especially at the plate. You know, that's one thing that's been the knock on Drew Waters, is that the strikeout rate is just way too high, especially for the major league level. It's too high for what he's doing where he is in the minors right now. And that's something that he needs to work on. And it's hard to tell where all these guys are in their development, because we didn't get to see a minor league season last year. So we'll learn a lot more about that this coming minor league season. But it certainly seems like Michael Harris did a great job this spring when he was with the Braves, the top organization, the top spring training site, of drawing the walks and having the drawn out plate appearances, you know, working the counts, doing those kinds of things. Seems like he was much better at than Drew Waters. And then basically, you know, he gives you a great glove out there in the outfield. I mean, he seems like he's a really, really great prospect to have right now. And I think that it's great for Drew Waters as well. I think it works well for both of them to just have some competition that they're fighting for. You don't want to ever anoint somebody. You know, we've seen that with Brian Snicker, with Christian Pache this year. You don't want to just anoint somebody a position as a starter at the major league level. So good for them to have guys that are, you know, scrapping and clawing for that spot.
I do think it has to be tough for Drew Waters, because he's gone. He's now gone from, it was Christian Pache or Drew Waters, ooh, we got to watch out on these two guys. And then Pache comes up. We now expect him to be, if not opening day center fielder, maybe a month later, you know, center fielder starting for the Braves, to then it was, okay, well, now it's Drew Waters' time. And then it seems like, oh no, now another guy has kind of passed him over, where Michael Harris Jr. also got the cosign of Nick Markakis, who was working with them in the off-site training?
Yeah, the alternate site.
Alternate site, there we go. Yeah, that was the phrase, the term that they used. The alternate site, where that's another one, you know, a veteran speaking to Brian Snicker and kind of putting that bug in his ear, is that it's only going to kind of continue to resonate until, you know, until we might see something, I think, a year from now.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's fascinating to me to see the way that these players are compared. It's like all of them get these like comparisons thrown out. That is, if any of them live up to any of these comparisons, you'll have an amazing player. Cause it's like Christian Pache is Andrew Jones, Drew Waters is Chipper Jones, Michael Harris is Barry Bonds and Ronald Acuna. So it's like, if we could just get one of those that actually happens, I think the Braves are in great shape.
Yeah. And it does continue something that I do get rather annoyed about, which is the hope for the future. You know, it's all about, hey, you know, hey, look, in a couple of years, this team, man, this team. I do get to a point where I want to see it now, but not at the expense of bringing in a guy who's not ready.
Right. And it's been one of the things we've talked about on the show going back to last year, which is that Alex Anthopoulos has yet to make that big kind of blockbuster trade that would push the team to a new level and really be like a sign that you're pushing the chips in to try to go for a championship. And he certainly now has the prospects to do it, and not just the assets in terms of the prospect talent, but also you've got the depth, where now you've got a Michael Harris, where Drew Waters may not have felt as tradable to you in the past, because you would be giving up so much of your talent that's in your system that you're planning on coming through. But now if you have two of those guys, then maybe one makes one of them a little bit more expendable, because you know that, you know, a guy like Drew Waters, if he's putting up numbers in AAA, like if both Drew Waters and Michael Harris are killing it, you know, they're not going to be happy to just like be stuck below where they feel like they should be. So I think that could also be a catalyst or an impetus for a trade as well. So we'll see if Alex Anthopoulos does anything like that this season or in the near future.
Yeah. I do want to get to a question that we have from our Facebook Live from John Culver. I think this is something we've touched on this in the past, so we don't have to spend a ton of time, but absolutely want to answer John's question, which is along the line of some of these prospects. Who do you feel will back up Travis d'Arnaud? He says, Contreras looks more ready, but Snit seems to like Alex. Does Langeliers have a shot, or would it be better to get him more playing time at Gwinnett? I'll let you answer this, Joe.
Yeah, I'll start with Langeliers first, because Snicker actually talked about him directly. He was asked about him, and he talked about kind of his future directly yesterday, which is that you know, he still just doesn't have a lot of playing time, and he needs some seasoning. So he will play a season in the minors. Don't think about Shea Langeliers as a major league player. But they certainly are very, very high on Shea Langeliers. Like, Snicker has referred to his arm as a weapon, and it's like, you only need to show it to a team once before teams just stop running on you because his arm is so good. And his pop-up time is really good too. Like, he's just a great defensive catcher, Shea Langeliers. And, he's shown that he can hit as well, but they just want to get him a season, you know, just get him a full season in the minors. Cause again, last year was so disruptive for all these minor league players that it's really tough. So expect for him to be in the minors. As it regards to William Contreras and Alex Jackson, I've kind of been of the opinion, and I think the Braves are also of the opinion, that William Contreras is the better player. If you were to have them make their power rankings of Braves catchers, they would play as Contreras over Jackson, but that doesn't always determine which player, especially which catcher, makes the opening day roster. And I think that Alex Jackson just has some things working. I don't even know if you would say it's in his favor, but there's like options are an issue where, you know, by keeping Alex Jackson in AAA, that could affect his trade value if you wanted to move him. Also, you're just not playing as much at the major league level. You'll be catching once every 5 days or so for Travis d'Arnaud, who's going to take on the majority of that duty. And so if you're the better player, if you're the better prospect, you probably, if you're the Braves, you want that player getting reps every single day, which will happen in AAA. So I think that that's where we're likely to see William Contreras this season. But I certainly think that William Contreras will play at the major league level at some point this season. I think that, you know, especially toward the latter half of the season, you'll start to want to get your best players in that group. And that's when we'll kind of see that start to happen.
Here's something that I want to put out there that is a potential possibility when it comes to this catching role, which is, and you spoke to the fact of catching once every 5 days, because what we've seen is Travis d'Arnaud, you know, being the, not every other day, but being pretty much the everyday catcher. I'm wondering, as we reach a point where Travis d'Arnaud is getting up in age and we get concerned about his legs, if it happens this season, I think it would be a good idea to try. Is that if William Contreras is the better catcher, At whatever point in the season that Brian Snicker wants to do this, that you go and start limiting the number of appearances that Travis d'Arnaud has, so that by the time he gets to the postseason, his legs are still fresh and he's still in good enough shape that he can propel the team to a big postseason run. I think that was something that we saw last year, where even in a shortened 60-game season, as many games as Travis d'Arnaud caught, you became concerned with his overall health and dare I say, durability reaching the postseason. And so if for now the thought is, well, Travis is going to catch 3 out of 5, 4 out of 5, and we want to use Alex Jackson because Contreras can get more playing time down at Gwinnett. If you want to transition at some point, maybe midsummer, maybe earlier than that, maybe after the summer, you know, early August, and start transitioning and saving d'Arnaud's legs, then that's when I would probably go to a Contreras.
spot on. I agree with 100% of what you said. And to your point, Travis d'Arnaud's a guy who's had injury, he's had injuries in the past. That's one of the reasons why the Braves were actually able to pick him up on a really great deal, is because he was coming off of some half played seasons where he was dealing with injuries and other teams didn't know how he was going to recover. I think the Braves were able to identify the fact that he was going to be able to recover well from those. But yeah, I think that that's totally right. Where once you transition, I think that it's smart for the Braves to kind of early on to help you get off to a good start to the season, try to use him more than you probably would. But then I think there is going to be at some point in the season, you put it on cruise control, right? You just don't go and push and pedal to the metal the whole way. Otherwise, I think you're right that you will get some deteriorated version of him come the playoffs. So you go on cruise control, and at that point, then yeah, once you're switching from you're catching 4 out of 5 days and the backup is catching 1 out of 5, when the backup's catching 2 out of 5, then I think it makes more sense to go to the more talented guy, go to Contreras. And who knows? And I think you could probably shuffle up the whole, you could move Shea Langeliers up to AAA or something, to take his spot. I think that would make a lot of sense, but it certainly does leave you with the question of what will end up happening to Alex Jackson. He seems to me like a guy that the Braves could have used. I thought they were actually going to use him in 2019 in a trade when they ended up beefing up their bullpen. They didn't have to trade him. But I've always felt, because he is a good defensive catcher, he's shown power. His issue is just making contact. So I think that he could be a piece that is useful for another team. And I wonder if the Braves will try to move him and then add to their bullpen or add to their bench at some point in the middle of the season.
One thing I do want to get to with, because we try to keep this within a reasonable time limit for you all to listen. I do want to get to, I would guess I would consider this somewhat big news of what Major League Baseball is looking to do with some rule changes in the minor leagues amongst, some of these guys who we're going to see in Gwinnett and Mississippi and so on, where Major League Baseball, they might want to shoot themselves in the foot and not do positive things like bringing back the DH, but they are looking at some safety things and other rules in minor league baseball to beef up offense and keep the game more interesting. Joe, I'll go down kind of through what they're going to do at each level so we can kind of get a feel for what we like, what we don't like, and if anything, we want to see more immediate than others. In AAA baseball, one of the big things they're going to do is go to larger bases. They're looking at collisions that they're having at bases, and they decided right now each base is 15 inches square. They're going to move it to 18 inches square, adding 3 inches, a little more room, make it tougher on your shortstop, your second baseman to make those tags. But they're hoping that the increased size cuts down on some collisions that they're having at each base. Do you want to go, I guess?
Yeah, let's just go one by one. Let's just list them and then we'll talk about them real quick. I won't go too long. I'm fine with this one. Although I only feel like this was really necessary for first base.
Thank you.
Yeah. Because I think it will make a big difference on stolen bases. I think a larger base means the runner is going to get there a tiny hair sooner. But that tiny, I mean, how often do those stolen bases come down to that tiny margin? So I think it's going to make a difference. I didn't think it was necessary other than first base, which I totally understand.
So this is one of those things where Major League Baseball has an issue that they want to solve. And there's an obvious answer, and then they go for a different direction that doesn't necessarily make any sense. I completely agree with you. The collisions issue, adding 3 inches to second base isn't going to make those collisions at second base any easier.
Right.
The issue we're having is at first base, where there are collisions with guys, trying to tag. There's also what Braves fans unfortunately probably remember, Tim Hudson getting his Achilles stepped on and being out for the rest of the year after he was trying to cover first base. Softball has solved this problem, Major League Baseball. They added the orange base to the right-hand side of first base. It's an option, you know, I mean, it makes things clear. You've got video replay to where you can make those decisions of, did he make, you know, I mean, they're in line with each other. They're just a little bit to the right. I don't know why you wouldn't just either add the extra base that softball does to first base, or just make first base wider, you know, make it a rectangle rather than making it a square. It seems like one of those things that they just overthought.
Yeah. Last thing, I don't know why you need to make every base bigger, because I mean, baseball already has different shaped and size bases. Like, you've got home plate that looks different than the other bases. You've got a pitching rubber that look, you know, it's like, who cares? Yeah. Like, they don't need to be. It feels like they felt some sort of need to be uniform about this, when I don't really think they needed to.
No, I completely agree. Now, Double A, they're doing something that I think is going to have a much larger impact if this gets brought into the major league level, which is defensive positioning, or cutting out the shift. Double A, it says the defensive team must have a minimum of 4 players on the infield, each of whom must have both feet completely in front of the outer boundary of the infield. So they got to be in the dirt. Depending on preliminary results, they may require infielders to be entirely positioned on each side of second base in the second half of the Double A season coming up. So it is, it is trying to eliminate the shift. Do you like this, Joe?
I don't have as hot of a take about this one as I've seen some other. I've seen people who say it's ridiculous to, you know, to have these kinds of rules. I don't think it's that ridiculous. I do think the enforcement of it would be really sketchy. It's like, okay, what if a guy is like half on, half off? Does he get a warning? Do you award just like the batter gets a base? You know, there are lots of questions. I'm interested to see how all of that is kind of adjudicated this year. But, you know, at the end of the day, we have to think of these rules as they're trying to improve the game. And I do think that this rule would mean more base hits, more runners. I think that that's exciting. So for that reason, I'm not as against it, because I do think that it has, as much as people hate the kind of being handcuffed and forcing players to be in certain positions on the field, I do think that it has positive. I could see why they want to implement something like this.
So my outlook on this is, I feel like I hear every, especially postseason, particularly Joe Buck and John Smoltz, who like to harp on the shift and say, well, why don't they just lay down a bunt, or why don't they just lay down a single in the gap and then get on base? Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where I want to look at those guys and say, do you not think if they could do that, they would do that? My issue with the shift is, I actually take the outlook of taking something over from the world of soccer. What does soccer not allow? Offside. The offside play, playing the ball up to your team, your offensive teammate in front of the defense. Well, why do they outlaw, or why do they, you know, put so much emphasis on offside in the game of soccer? Well, because it's easier for the offense to score if they have that option. I think it brings in a level of fairness to the game of soccer. And I think what it would do to baseball, if you essentially outlaw the shift, is you make it more fair. Look, you want offense, but then, I don't know, you want to even things out a little bit. And to do that by kind of creating a rule that brings in some logic and drives home the fact that you're going to get more offense, you're going to get more even playing. Now, when it comes to where that, you know, where the second baseman, where the shortstop has to be, where that line is, I do think if you're going to put this rule in, you've got to put something in the infield, you know, write it, maybe the end of the dirt. Yes,
some indicator. Yeah.
Yeah. Behind second base of, here is a line, mm-hmm. you know, chalk it up maybe with white chalk of, here's the line. if you are over that from your position, then, you know, then you violated the rule. And I'm assuming the batter takes his free base. You know, I don't know how they're going to figure that out, but I think there is something to this that is going to, it could really help the game where defensive positioning has created, much like the pitcher coming up to the plate. Oh, here's an easy out. Because look, guys are driving the ball into those directions. Just, you know, that's what they do. It's one of those, it's not so easy to fix that when a guy is throwing 100 miles at you and you're trying to hit the pitch.
Right.
Kind of moving on with what's going on in high A, this is another way that Major League Baseball is really trying to deal with pitchers and their pickoff moves. High A is going to have a step-off rule, which pitchers are required to disengage the rubber prior to throwing any base with a penalty of a balk in the event the pitcher fails to comply. So no more keeping your heel, looking over at first, and then making that quick pick move. You've got to step off the rubber and make that throw. Do you like this one?
No, I don't. I think that, you know, I it seems to me like they want to incentivize, they want to make it easier to steal bases by, you know, making it like a slower move, more complicated move. But yeah, I'm not for it. I just don't think that they need to do it. It's just unnecessary in my opinion.
I'm completely with you. I am 100% out on this rule. I think the amount of time it takes for the pitcher to take his heel off the rubber, I mean, that is just gifting the base dealer, which is, I mean, they want more stolen bases, but I think this is going way too far where you are just giving it away. That
for a major league player, it's too much of an advantage, I think.
Yeah. I mean, there's already, I feel like the amount of time that baseball has been played and guys studying body movement and all of those things, there's already enough information for the base runner to be able to steal that. Now this is just way too much you're giving away. Now I do want to transition that to what I do like, which is what low A baseball is looking to do this year, which is to limit the pickoffs in an inning.
See, I don't like this one either. I don't like this one. I think I might dislike this one even more than the last one, because to me it's like, once you try the second one, then you know you can't get picked off. It's like, you can't, if you've tried to pick off twice and you can't, so then what the hell is stopping you from, like, I don't know, take like a 20-foot lead. I don't know. And the other thing is, because of that, then it's like there's mind games. Like when you throw in the first one, and maybe this adds a little bit of strategy, but it's like, then like after you throw the first one, kind of limits you. It's like, okay, you can't really throw it over there twice. You can only throw over there once, basically. And yeah, I guess just not a fan, but
no. So just first off, for the rule in all of its entirety, pitchers will be limited to a total of 2 step offs or pickoffs per plate appearance. While there is at least one runner on base, a pitcher may attempt a 3rd step off or pickoff in the same plate appearance. However, if the runner safely returns to the occupied base, the result is a
ball. Okay, gotcha.
There is a little bit to this where also communication with your catcher, he'd be ready for, you know, for it coming his way and him having to make quick pop time, make a move to get an out. Mm-hmm. I think this is just one of those that we're trying to deal with pace of play. Obviously, you can't totally affect pace of play because, what was it, 2 days ago, we had a 22 pitch at bat in spring training. We're just absolutely, and it ended in a walk. You know, I think there are some pace of play things that you can't do anything about. But this one, limiting pickoff moves, where if you've ever been a fan at a game, I mean, shoot, if you've ever been a media member at a game, and you just, you know, oh, there you go, you know, and the fans start boo, you know, because it happens, you know, 4 or 5 times in the same plate appearance with a guy trying to pick off the guy at first. I like the fact that, hey, make them meaningful pickoffs. You can't just, well,
yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. There's not the old toss over. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you've got to make meaningful, you know, pickoff moves. Otherwise, you're wasting your opportunity, and you could end up with a bar. I love it.
You've swayed me a little bit. You've swayed me a little bit.
Thank you. See, my I'm coming out a little bit, you know, that's where right. I can slowly
go to law school, take the LSAT.
Exactly. Yeah, it's bad. I was about to say, I was trying to think of the word debate, you know, I'm becoming a little bit, you know, where I can debate and convince people, but no, because I'm right back because I couldn't even think of the word. I think the other thing that Low A is trying to do, emphasizing pitch timer again, also emphasizing the, was it electronic umpire or
the ABS. Automatic ball strike system?
Yeah, yeah.
The ABS, baby. I love it. I love it.
I'm not a car guy, but I know enough about cars that when I see ABS, I think of, you know, automatic braking system. What's going on in your car? That
it's anti-lock braking system.
Anti-lock braking system. Thank you. I said I wasn't a car
guy. Not a car guy.
And I really proved myself. No, that's what I get for trying to think of a couple of things at the same time. But yeah, so seeing automatic ball strike system. My dad's going to kill me for this one. Oh, well. But yeah, seeing ABS is weird, you know, to see together and it be baseball related. But it's electronic balls and strikes where, you know, there's still a home plate umpire, but there's someone behind, or there's technology behind him that is recording the strike zone. And I think that is a thing that, look, I don't know that that's ever going to reach the major league level. We'd all love it because we all complain, especially come, you know, championship and World Series time. But I think that because it's all the way down in Low A and was before in rookie ball, I don't know that it's realistic, even though I'd love to see it one day.
It would probably take a while for it to filter all the way up to the major league level. I'm sure. I don't know. Are the umpires unionized? I think they are. I think they have a union, but I'm not positive about that.
I believe
so. Either way, they will, I'm sure, fight against it because they will want to continue to make those calls. It, you know, gives them more authority in the game, and that would theoretically impact how much they would make. But I mean, I think that this is the right thing for the game. It's one of the most important calls that are made. Every single pitch is extremely important to get right. It just makes for a fairer game. It's a faster game. It will, you know, limit even more you know, arguments about this kind of thing. So only good things in my eye. And you, it's not like, okay, if we really care about the umpires, like, you still have to have a guy there, a home plate umpire, to do the other thing, call the other things that umpire has to do other than just call the balls and strikes. So yeah, I'm totally for this. And I hope that it is a roaring success and just like comes to the major league level as fast as possible.
So here's my thing. Major League Baseball loves bargaining chips. They love to say,
that's true,
here, we'll give you this one thing, but we want this one thing.
You just said bargaining chip, and I just got shivers.
Well, so, but here's my bargaining chip for the umpires. I'll give you getting rid of replay system if you give me ABS.
Ooh.
Because
that's big.
Because have we not completely screwed up the replay system where it's 90% of the time we're going with whatever the umpire's call is because, well, we don't want to question their authority. I think on this, if you take something completely out of their hands where they don't have to worry about it, they just have, you know, they have their little marker in their hand and, okay, I'm being told that one's a ball, that one's a strike, but the rest of the game is up to their call and up to their decision, then, hey, maybe, you know, maybe a little give and take there. I don't know. I hope that maybe in the future that could be something, one for the other. I'm absolutely willing to give up the replay system.
Bold.
Are you ready to wrap up, Joe? I think we've held the folks over a bit longer.
That's good.
Than we used to go
free. You know, there's free baseball and there's free baseball podcasts. We gave them extra innings of podcast time. So happy to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, folks, if you like what you're listening to, I will always say, you know, like, subscribe, all of the
smash.
Yeah,
smash exactly. Buttons.
Yeah. You know, do all the normal things you do with podcasts, leave a review. If you have our boss's email, email them, tell you like it. If you don't like it, just put it on mute. Don't exit out, put it on mute. We like the views and we like the listening hours, all of those important things. So keep coming back. Once again, if you have any questions, feel free to hit us up on Twitter at JAPatrick200.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at ATLJohnson18. Feel free to, you know, drop any questions, any thoughts you might have, anything into the Facebook Live chat as we're going along. Really appreciate you guys tuning in for another episode. We'll see you again next week.